LegalizeFreedom.com. Why are we here? Where do we come from? Where are we going? From the nature of reality to the future of humanity. Beyond politics, poverty, and war. LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greetings and welcome once again to LegalizeFreedom.com. I'm your host Greg Moffat, and my guest today is Dr. Eric Karlstrom, a former professor of geography at California State University. The world is clearly facing an environmental crisis. Some of the problems of pollution and resource depletion are so serious that they risk the extinction of entire species and perhaps even all life on Earth. More than any other risk, however, the danger posed by global warming, now known as climate change, looms largest over the planet. The causes of climate change are hotly debated, but the dominant view today is that human activity, and specifically the burning of fossil fuels and associated discharge of carbon dioxide into the Earth's atmosphere, is by far the most significant. As a result, massive programs designed to permanently change our society, economy, lifestyle, and the way we interact with nature are being implemented. These aim to drastically cut our energy use, material standard of living, and ultimately, the human population. But what if our understanding of the causes of climate change is flawed? Is it possible that the shifts in weather activity we are witnessing are simply part of a much larger picture, one in which the Earth's climate is forever changing and evolving over millions, even billions of years? We undoubtedly need to use less energy to clean up the environment and conserve the valuable natural resources without which we cannot survive, but we must do so in the right way and for the right reasons. Following years of research and with highly specialized knowledge, Dr. Karlstrom has concluded that the issue of climate change has been dangerously corrupted and that it is being exploited to serve nefarious political, economic, and social agendas. Hello and welcome, Eric Karlstrom, and thank you very much for joining us today on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Well, good morning, Greg. Yeah, it's good to be here. I'm coming to you from Crestone, Colorado. Our topic, I believe, is global warming, and the temperature when I got up this morning was about minus 12 degrees Fahrenheit. I'd have to look at a conversion chart, but it's pretty cold.
Yeah, it's pretty cold here too, actually. Now, just to start off, one thing I'm going to say about myself personally is I don't believe anything. I either know it or I don't know it. And when it comes to the controversial questions surrounding global warming or climate change, as we now have to call it, there's a lot of unknowns out there, but I certainly don't believe anything about it. Now, in your work, you have demonstrated with your facts and figures and work you've been doing for a long time now, that your, well, say belief, you're happy that you've established that the man-made global warming stroke climate change phenomenon is actually a fraud. Now, this is a very emotional issue. People get very passionate about it. It's very divisive. It's controversial. And people doing work like you are, and even people who haven't done any of the research but who are skeptical about it, they are now labeled deniers. And I should say that questioning this issue, the issue of man-made global warming, is not insisting on business as usual. You know, I'm sure you would agree there are some very real environmental problems out there that need to be addressed urgently. But nonetheless, that being said, the Earth has been cooling since around 1998, and global warming, climate change, whatever you want to call it, is driven much more likely by the sun, by ocean temperatures, even by cosmic rays. So perhaps you can set out just the big picture of the work that you've been doing in this area.
Yeah, well, you did a nice job of laying out the issues, Greg. I just retired from 30 years of being a geography professor at three universities, and my topic was physical geography, And I got my PhD in Calgary, Alberta, so there were lots of Brits there, and most Brits, I think, are fairly well educated in geography, and they probably know that physical geography includes geomorphology, climatology, soils, and biogeography. And my particular areas of research have been in geomorphology, or landscape evolution, soils, and climate change. I got my PhD in 1981 from the University of Calgary. My topic was the glacial history of Glacier National Park and Waterton National Parks, right along the border between Canada and the United States. I got my master's degree from the University of Wyoming in 1977, and the topic there was geoarchaeology of the Laddy Creek archaeological site in the Bighorn Mountains in northern Wyoming. And what I was trying to do in that one was to help the archaeologists figure out the environmental changes that had been occurring during the time of human occupation, which there went back about 7,000 or 8,000 years. So always I have worked on trying to discern patterns of environmental and climate change from looking at the landscape, looking at geomorphology, looking at soils, in glacial environments, in stream environments, etc. So as a physical geographer, I've always been on the earth science side of geography. Half the articles I've published in journals were in geology journals, and half the conferences that I've gone to over the years are in geology conferences. So I'm on the borderline between geography and geology. Both disciplines sometimes claim soils and geomorphology in particular. And when I saw back in the 1980s, when I was just starting out as a professor at Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff, Arizona, when I saw this issue coming down the train tracks like a huge train, I thought it was fine that, you know, the government was throwing extra money at climate research. In fact, back in the 70s, perhaps, I don't know how old you are, but you might not recall, but the big scare in the mid-70s was there was a cooling trend, about a 30-year cooling trend, and therefore the press got a hold of that and said, look out, we're going into another ice age.
Yes, I do remember that, actually. I remember that clearly because I don't like the heat, and I was quite looking forward to an ice age.
Yeah, so the fickle press, had us all scared about that, or tried to get us all scared about that, and then within about 5 years, about 1977, it started warming up a bit, and pretty soon they almost didn't miss a beat. They just went into trying to figure out how to use this climate change issue as a way to galvanize political support for political agendas, which of course ultimately have to do with our economy, because 85% of the energy that we get in the United States and worldwide comes from fossil fuels. And of course, fossil fuels are carbon-based, and when you burn them, coal, gas, and oil, when you burn them, carbon dioxide is produced. So I remember my first climatology class, it was probably mid-70s at Flagstaff at Northern Arizona University, and even then the issue of carbon dioxide was out there, and we were taught kind of the standard storyline, which I now disbelieve, the standard storyline being that carbon dioxide, which is a trace gas, 380 parts per million, or four molecules in 10,000, a very tiny percentage of the atmosphere gases. It is one of a number, about five or six, what we call greenhouse gases. Water vapor is by far the most important greenhouse gas in the effect that it has. But the notion was that CO2 would trap terrestrial heat or a long infrared radiation given off by the Earth, and then re-radiate that, counter-radiate it back to the Earth, and you would affect disobey the laws of thermodynamics. You would actually almost create new energy in the process, you know. And I think that there's a great book out now, which I've interviewed Dr. Tim Ball in Canada, who's Canada's first PhD in climatology, educated at London. And he's written a book now called Slaying the Sky Dragon, Death of the Greenhouse Gas Theory. And I think the greenhouse gas theory is one of these things that got promoted originally through ignorance, and then it was latched onto by political interests, and then became all this has become a massive propaganda brainwashing blitz, and because it suits certain political objectives, which, in a nutshell, the United Nations would like to be the prototypical global government, and what better way to do it than to regulate all economic activity and tax all economic activity, which of course is based on the use of fossil fuels. And then if you really want to have control, and these Malthusian global elite people don't really want to share the planet's resources with the other 7 billion people, they really want to reduce the population. So how would you do that? Well, you control food, you control water, you control all the, and of course energy, and you control all the essentials of life, and you regulate them. So pretty soon there's not only a carbon footprint, there's a nitrogen footprint, and there's a water footprint, and everybody's got to be very concerned about sustainability, because if I eat this hamburger, that could wreck the chances of the next generation. I mean, all this is total nonsense, but this is the propaganda that our children have been hearing in the public schools.
Well, we'll come to many of these points in greater detail, but perhaps first of all, we should address the point that I made sort of in my introduction, was that people questioning this then get labeled with, as I say, as deniers, but more as then people who are not concerned about the environment, that if you're questioning this theory, then that means that you necessarily drive one or more gas guzzling vehicles, that you want the right to, you know, have a jet ski and, you know, fly around the world at the drop of a hat. And that's not the case. And what this ends up doing is the divisive nature of this, it pits genuinely concerned people against each other, when actually they do want the same thing, which is a clean, healthy environment for everything living on the earth.
Yeah, you know, I think if there's an environmentalist, it's me. I mean, I spent a lot of time skiing, climbing, and hiking all over the beautiful American West, and indeed mountain ranges all over the world. And I got into geography because I was concerned about the environment, and I liked being in nature, etc. But what has happened, Greg, is that the environmental movement has been co-opted. They say green is the new red. And the United Nations attempts to regulate all human activity just right out of the Soviet Union. And what the global elite would like is to impose, well, fascism for the rich and communism for everybody else. If communism is a great way to enslave people. And this is what they want to do. They want to regulate and limit all human activity based on these so-called environmental concerns, which incidentally, we have the technology, the corporations and the military have technology that will clean up the environment. But I think it suits their purposes to, you know, problem, reaction, solution, to create or to augment. The top polluter in the United States is the U.S. military by far. The U.S. government is the number one polluter. So the U.S. government could go a long way towards solving the problem if they just addressed it. But it's not in the game plan of the global elite to have the corporations clean up their... Well, maybe that's happening a little bit. But what I'm saying is that this is all now gone beyond the level of facts to the level of ideology and propaganda and brainwashing. And I think, I don't know how much you know about mind control, but I've been looking into it in the last year, and it's a very evil subject. Free will may be at stake in the future. But right now we have this incredible propaganda blitz. A lot of it's coming from Britain, by the way, England in particular. There's a lot of divisiveness about it, but, you know, I taught climatology for years, and in the last several years I started using books by climatologists who were very much of the opinion that I am, and so I was the lone ranger at the university where I taught, which is California State University, Stanislaus. Meanwhile, the biology department was going to get on the gravy train of of grants and funds and whatnot, and they had a brown bag lunch series every Friday or whatever on the topic of climate change. Now, these are biologists, so they don't know anything about climate change, but they know that they can get on board if they skew their research in such a way that climate change is in the title of the project. So they, being academic opportunists, like I'm afraid so many are forced to be, they were having this series on climate change. I was never invited. The guy who taught climatology, the guy who'd done the research in climatology, so it'd be like the geography department having a research forum or something like that on genetics. You know, this is a topic which has jumped out of the normal academic constraints. I read an article recently, 700 American university presidents were signed on to a certain climate change initiative that they were going to promote such and such. We did a geography professor search the year before I left, and our dean told us we should hire this English guy who had done his research in climate modeling at the University of Texas. And because he's a computer guy, he doesn't know squat about the real world. All he knows is how to input data in computers. So this becomes the new virtual reality. So all of this is virtual reality. It has nothing to do with, I grew up out in the field. I mean, I was out there with a pick and shovel and bringing samples back to the laboratory and, you know, got my hands real dirty and got my feet cold. And this new generation is not connected to the outside world, as far as I can tell. They have a different MO. They were taught differently. What they want to do is model reality, and then they start to believe that their models are reality. And they often are very, well, all the models are wrong in terms of, they've all been proven wrong. All of them predicted, as you said, it's been cooling since 1998, very slightly. All of them predicted warming. You have all these very, very high-tech climate models, which different organizations have put forward with supercomputers. And, you know, that's okay, fun and games, you know, they're trying to figure out how the climate system works. And by the way, it's infinitely complex, and we haven't gotten there yet. We can't make a deterministic model of what the climate's going to do. We can't predict the weather for more than a week or 10 days at the most, because weather is basically chaotic. And so, of course, climate is just average weather. So to think that we can predict long-term climate changes when we can't predict short-term changes in the weather is I'm afraid to say it, is lunacy. So what we've done is, now there have been times in the past when science, different scientific fields have been co-opted by political agendas and corrupted. And this is what I believe has happened and is happening to the small field of climatology.
Well, as well as people being excluded from discussions and debates, a lot of so-called debate that takes place in the mainstream media, is very frustrating for lay people trying to get a handle on this, because quite often there is no debate. There's a lot of arguing, a lot of condemnation, name-calling, mudslinging. And at the end of the day, a lot of the basic questions about this are actually left unanswered. If you listen to a discussion on climate change, on, you know, say, for example, on the BBC, you get one person flatly denying that that, you know, a significant proportion of climate change is due to human activity. You'll get another person on the other side of the coin who puts completely the opposite side of the opinion. They both have data, apparently, to back up what they're saying. And at the end, and after a bit more squabbling, it's left hanging in the air. So I think, you know, a lot of people are looking for the answers. They do want to know what the truth is, but they're getting conflicting messages coming from everyone. It's not helped by the fact that it's such an emotional thing that people can't just look at the hard facts and try and discern one from the other.
Well, you're absolutely right, Greg, and I'm enjoying this discussion because you are right on. Let me just give you a few basics. One of the books that I used recently in my class is a book by an earth scientist, a geologist from Australia named Ian Plimer. It's called Heaven and Earth, Global Warming, the Missing Science. And it's a, you know, I did it for a senior level course. It's a graduate level book. I mean, there's an enormous amount of information in there. But the bottom line is the Earth's 4.5 billion years old, according to a lot of earth scientists. 80% of the time, at least, during that time, the climate was warmer, significantly warmer than it is now, maybe 8, 10 degrees centigrade. No tipping points were reached. In fact, during warmer climates, historically, geologically, and culturally, species thrive. They do better. The average temperature of the Earth is about 13 to 15 degrees centigrade. We can't even really agree on that. It's well below the optimal, which for humans is about 20. If we look at Earth's history, and we even look at human history, we see that during periods of warmth, let's take the Viking expansion period of around 1,000 years ago, all over Europe, there was longer lifespans, longer growing seasons, greater crop yields, greater wealth. Culture thrives. Now, during the Little Ice Age, which started around 1300, 1400 AD, conditions were reversed, and we went towards cooling, and just the opposite occurred. Growing seasons were shorter, lifespans were shorter, there was less wealth, there was plagues and things like that, bad times. Cooling is what is dangerous, and I personally agree with you that we're going into a cooling phase. Now, here we are being told that we're warming, and we're not preparing logically for cooling, which is what we need to be doing. So again, I think we need to look very hard at this cadre, this cabal that runs the world for their benefit, and that means that they run the different nation states and get us to fight against each other. But they don't want to share. The United Nations has lots of documents saying we have too many people and we need to reduce the numbers, blah, blah, blah. And Britain, the BBC, is the propaganda arm of the British government. And English government is, I think, and I've done a lot of research on this, the main controlling factor in the UN and the prototypical global government. So you are sitting there ground zero of the propaganda factory.
The theory of man-made climate change, being as significant as it is actually a fraud. I was asking myself, well, then why would they not construct this based on what's actually happening in the real world? Because they now have a problem with cooling. But then, is it the case that they started out with this when warming was happening, hoping to move forward with the agenda a little bit faster? But now that cooling's here, they're having to do absurd things like say that global warming is due to global cooling to make the policy and the politics fit whatever the situation actually is, even if it's an absurdity.
Yeah, well, I think the reality is, and again, climatology is a fairly young science, and I think Earth scientists have a better handle on climate change over longer time spans than anybody else, because they are studying longer time spans and they're looking at environmental changes and they're seeing what's happened. We have cycles of climate change. Like right now, we are about 2 to 3 million years into a ice age, and we call this period the Quaternary period, or the Pleistocene epoch. We're actually out of the Pleistocene and into the Holocene now, the last 10,000 years. The Holocene is a period of relative climate stability and warmth. It's called the climatic optimum. It's optimal conditions for life. So human culture has thrived under a stable, warm climate. Good for agriculture, and of course this completely overlaps with the age of agriculture, which also started about that same time, about 10,000 years ago. So climate, there used to be a whole school of thought called climate determinism, that different climates of the world will determine how the cultures are, how the people are, what the races look like and everything. And they probably went a little overboard with that. But in fact, climate is what we might call an independent variable. And everything else is dependent on that, like the vegetation shifts when climate changes. Climate changes naturally all the time. And yet all of the computer models assume, and this is programmed into the computer models, the assumption that climate is stable. Well, any earth scientist who got out of, first or second year courses knows that that is wrong. And so, garbage in, garbage out. They say in the computer world, you put in bad assumptions, you're going to come to bad conclusions. And that's why every one of the models is wrong. They assume, number one, stable climate. Without human influence. Number two, they assume that CO2 is the most important climate driver, and that's completely erroneous. As you say, the oceans and the sun have a much greater role. So you've got the two fundamental assumptions are erroneous. And, of course, your conclusions are erroneous, and they all predict, you know, something like, 1 to 2 degrees Fahrenheit, or excuse me, 1 degree centigrade to maybe, 5 or 6 degrees centigrade warming by the end of this century. Well, all that's going to be wrong, I'm sure, just like the I can't be absolutely sure, but the trend is towards cooling. And so if you really want to understand climate, you start to look at these cycles. Okay, what is the periodicity of the cycle? What's the frequency of the cycle? And what's the magnitude of climate change in the past? And if you want to predict the future, you should understand the past. And to start out with the assumption that the Earth's climate is stable, and then humans came along and started burning fossil fuels, that's the most ludicrous, ignorant, pathetic hypothesis that any scientist could have ever come up with. And of course, to sell that to the public requires just that. It requires selling. And let me just read you this. This comes from our friend, Professor Robert M. Carter's book, Climate, the Counter Consensus. He's from Australia, and he's done his work on deep sea cores. And this is, deep sea core work has been going on for a good 50 years, and what they find is climate cycles. You know, about 20 major glacial, interglacial fluctuations in the last 2 million years. Okay, like I say, we are now in an interglacial called the Holocene. We could well be on a downturn towards a cooler, sliding back into a glacial, but that, of course, is debatable. But my point is, here's Chapter 8, Communicating the Story. He's talking about the propaganda. And this is coming from the Institute for Policy Research in London. The Institute for Policy Research is an outgrowth of the Tavistock Institute for Human Relations, which I've come to realize is the number one brainwashing center for the world and has been since World War I. Okay, this is a subcontractor for the Institute for Public Policy Research in London. It says, the task of climate change agencies is not to persuade by rational argument. Instead, we need to work in a more shrewd and contemporary way, using subtle techniques of engagement. The, quote, facts, unquote, need not be treated as being so, the facts need to be treated as being so taken for granted that they need not be spoken. Ultimately, positive climate behaviors need to be approached in the same way as marketeers approach acts of buying and consuming. It amounts to treating climate-friendly activity as a brand that can be sold. This is, we believe, the route to mass behavior change. Okay, that's coming from G. Ariute and N. Signet, 2006. But again, subcontracting for the Institute for Public Policy Research, which is a spinoff of the Tavistock Institute. We're talking total marketing, PR, sales, brainwashing of the public. So of course people are confused. And that's the point, is to confuse people enough to get people enough riled up emotionally to make this an ideological issue as it is. I've got friendships that are just not doing very well. Some of my best friends are in the field of science, and they profit from the bucks that the governments have been throwing at this ludicrous hypothesis, which wouldn't stand the test of an eighth grade science fair. And so they've become ideologically attuned to the idea that fossil fuels are bad, we've got to get rid of them, and because it's destroying the environment, quote unquote. Well, bullshit. I mean, this is just the biggest nonsense I've ever heard in my life. And I am a science professor, and I can just tell you that this is complete poppycock, and it's coming from Britain.
I fully expect to get emails saying, you know, how dare you give time to this charlatan or whatever once this is broadcast.
Let me give you a personal note here, Greg. Mm-hmm. Okay, my father worked with the U.S. Geological Survey, put in a whole career. He's still alive, but he loves his work, and that's perhaps why I went into something similar, very similar, as it turned out. And he was mapping the quaternary glacial geology of Alaska all through my childhood. He was mapping and dating the sequence of glacial advances and retreats. Okay, my father's not a normal guy. He's brilliant. He's could go down as a great scientist. But of course, takes time to weed through all the different voices. So that will be determined in the future. But he's always been a cycles guy. And when I was growing up, he'd stay up till 2 o'clock at 3 o'clock at night every night, doing these incredible detailed graphs. He would go through all the different civilizations and find out when they, when they crashed and when they thrived, and he'd put that up against his climate model, which had to do with mainly Earth's orbital variations around the sun for the long-term cycles, and the moon's orbit around the Earth for the shorter-term, higher-frequency cycles. And then, of course, it gets into sunspot cycles and things like that. So anyway, he's got cycles and cycles and cycles, and he's been doing this since the 50s and 60s. He was hounded out of the U.S. Geological Survey because that was not the politically correct conclusion back in the 80s, about 84. About the same time I was hounded out of Northern Arizona University. I personally believe that the intelligence agencies like the CIA are all over this topic because they have had a long-term plan to change mass behavior change through this scare issue. And if you have, the CIA has been doing for years a thing called influence mapping. You want the right people in the right positions. You want the right voices of authority to say the right thing, which then supports whatever, Big Brother 1984 kind of agenda is that the party advocates at the moment. Well, my dad had done a hell of a lot of work. And interestingly enough, it turned me on, and I got interested in it myself. Even as a graduate student, I got interested in the whole issue of climate change. So, the two of us are not your average scientist. The average biologist knows nothing about climate change. We know a hell of a lot. And I've got a huge library of books, and I got a huge library of reprints, and it's all hard copy because I'm afraid one of these days the computers might just take over and we'll lose all the real solid stuff. But anyway, so there's a real political and economic aspect to science and which scientists get the microphone. Now, I was partly, I'll admit, probably due to my association with my father, I was invited into a group called the American Quaternary Association as treasurer when I was a pretty young professor. So I was hanging out with the top scientists in the field, and this is multidisciplinary. Quaternary, again, is the last 2 or 3 million years of Earth history, which is synonymous with the ice ages. So these are palynologists and deep sea core people and archaeologists and geologists and soils people and geographers, all disciplines looking at the issues of climate change. So I was sitting there kind of at ground zero of the whole thing. Well, I watched the whole thing come down. I would go to the meetings every couple of years. In the mid-80s, the biannual meeting of AMQA, the American Quaternary Association, was in Boulder, Colorado. And even in 1986, or was it 88? My memory starting to fail a little bit here. I think it was 86 in Boulder. The thing was taken over by computer people. And then the 88 conference, which was back in Flagstaff, where I had started my career, the keynote address was by a guy named Stephen Schneider, who is a biologist who's now recently died, who is a ideologue pushing the global warming agenda. He knew nothing about